You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Welcome on into Dana and Parks. You're going to love this next story. It is soothing. It's happy. It will make you think. The Poetry Society of America has chosen the most beautiful word in the English language.
Oh.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
No, Sam.
I'm sorry.
First of all, if you had to choose three words, I mean, clearly we have a winner.
My finger slipped. I didn't mean to.
Wow, you just dropped that one.
More than...
It was a splash.
More than 1,000 scholars and scribes from the Poetry Society of America have chosen the most beautiful word in the English language. When I give you the finalists, I don't know that you will all agree that this is the most beautiful word, but here it is. Your winner is diaphanous.
Oh.
Merriam-Webster defines diaphanous as something characterized by such fineness of texture as to permit seeing through, as in translucent, or something constituted of extreme delicacy of form.
Now, did they choose this word based on what it means?
No.
Or on how the word is said how and flows off the tongue?
It flows off the tongue.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
It's flowing.
To create a consensus, the Poetry Society of America put multiple words up for a vote, and diaphanous barely came in first with 17%. Now, I want to give you the runners up.
Yeah, what did it beat?
Ethereal, meaning otherworldly, took home second with 12%.
That's a good word.
And then my favorite, mellifluous.
Mellifluous. Mellifluous.
Something sweet, smooth, or pleasant was the third top word with 10%. Now, mellifluous is interesting because I find that to be clunky. Mellifluous.
Mellifluous.
Not beautiful.
Poets choose beautiful words through something called phonesthetics, the branch of linguistics and psychology that studies the subjective pleasantness or unpleasantness of a word. Words comprised of L, M, and S letters are among the most popular choices, including some loan words from Latin languages like luminous, amor.
Couldn't help but notice that three of those letters are in my name.
Is it saudade, S-A-U-D-A-D-E, Portuguese for melancholic nostalgia?
I mean, Samuel sounds pretty beautiful.
Mélange.
Samuel.
All populated that list.
It's a good word.
Quoting here from Matt Brogan, executive director of the Poetry Society, one of the paradoxes of language is that it is easier to hear the distinctive music of a language that you don't know than one that you do. Think about it. He says some words may phonetically seem beautiful, but delineate from delicate connotations. And here are his examples. Words that phonetically seem beautiful, but really are not. Diarrhea. I swear to God, it's number one on the list. Followed by euthanasia. It sounds beautiful.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
Sorry, I missed my cue there. Zoned off for a second.
The meaning of beautiful words change over time, a concept known as semantic shift, a component of linguistic evolution driven by cultural and technological changes. Ultimately, while diaphanous captures the delicate beauty of language, not all modern coinages possess such grace. Yeah.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
Samuel!
So that's the most beautiful, diaphanous, according to the poets.
Yes.
So now, what is the most ugly?
Well, I was going to ask, and I want you guys to text in your submissions, because there's really one winner. at 913-586-77. You know what the word is. When they talk about the beauty of a word or the opposite, it is called phonesthetics. Like, think phonic, then aesthetics. It ranks, if you're a phonesthetician person.
Careful.
You are ranking words on their pleasantness or unpleasantness.
Mm-hmm.
And let me look up and see, according to phonesthetics, if you had to guess, what is the most unpleasant word? I give you one guess. Go.
The one that I want to go to, because everybody goes to it, has an M and an S in it, which would contradict the studies. But
ooh,
I'm going to go with moist.
Yes, you know that. That's it. Uh-huh. Moist is the probably the most.
Moist. How about squelch?
Okay.
Or phlegm.
There, you got one. Moist is often cited as the most loathed word in the English language due to its lingering vowels and clammy connotations.
Moist.
Phlegm ranks poorly due to a clunky consonant cluster and associated with bodily fluids.
What about crevice? No. Does it matter how you say it?
Curdle, pulp, and slit feature abrupt stops or hissing sounds that many find grating on the ear as well.
Crepuscular.
Ooh, no, I kind of like crepuscular.
Wait, what? What does that mean?
Okay, what does it mean? It is a word.
Are you just making things up in there?
No, ooh. No, I'm looking up.
All right.
Secretion.
Secretion is on the list. Maggots is on the list. Mucus is on the list.
Crepuscular means active at dawn or dusk.
Okay.
Like a crepuscular
smear.
Animal.
Secrete.
What about absquatulate?
No, I like absquatulate. Roaches is on the list.
Pulchritude.
I feel like some of these are only on the list, though, not because of the way the word sounds, but because of what you envision.
Wait, we might have one worse than moist. And it's on the list of 56 of the worst words in the English language.
Moist.
Pustule. That is the worst.
Or just pus in general.
It's also on the list, Sam. Followed by, goes phlegm, pus, and pustule.
Yeah, don't squeeze that one.
What else is
on
here?
Okay, really, text line? I can't say any of those.
I'm going to be honest. Hubby is on here. I hate that word. Let me check with the hubby. I don't like the word hubby, and I don't know why.
Okay.
Is on the list, as you just said.
Felony?
No, I like felony. I mean, I would prefer not to commit one or have one committed on me.
Disheveled?
I like disheveled. Damp, curd, rancid, winningest. Wait,
winningest?
Winningest is on the list of the top 56 words people hate.
Why?
I don't know.
Ooh, grundle.
I don't mind grundle. I think pustule might be worse than moist.
And great point from the text line. Why do we have a bunch of disgusting words that describe male and female anatomy? Basically, every word just sounds ugh.
Bad.
And I won't be saying them on the radio.
Oh, how about snot?
Here's one that people hate.
Vomit.
On the 56 words.
Puke.
And it's just not a good word. And I agree. And I'm a breeder. Fetus. I hate that word.
Female anatomy. There you go.
What? No, it's not a female anatomy word. But baby is so pleasant.
It's anatomy.
Baby is pleasant. Newborn is pleasant. Infant, also pleasant. Fetus is like, I don't know. It's just gross.
What
it's a gross
turd?
Word.
Lot of these are based just on our own brains and how we hear things and the sounds of them all. I mean, fetus, there's nothing wrong with the fetus.
There's nothing wrong with it.
It's like femur or, you know.
Nope, femur does not have the same, like, it doesn't do the same thing to me.
What about fungus?
Ooh. Yeah, fungus.
Moist fungus.
No!
Crusty. Crusty fungus.
No, crusty, moist fungus.
Well, which is it, Dan?
Yeah, it can't be crusty and moist.
Oh,
we are going to
fecal matter. Repugnant.
Go to pray. There were all kinds of meetings and people were up in arms 15, 16 years ago because they decided to add a cell phone tower on the golf course. And the tower from even 100 yards, if you squint, looked exactly like a tree, a really, really, really tall evergreen tree. Sort of out of place because we're not in Colorado.
Yeah, they disguised it.
Or in the deep south. I mean, you know, where my parents live, they have these gigantic evergreens. But it really does blend in with the scenery. If you don't know what you're looking for, you would drive by and just, you wouldn't even notice it because it looks like a tree, right? It was hugely controversial at the time because people didn't know, like with a microwave, if I stand close to it, am I going to grow a third nipple? Like people just didn't know.
No, it'll just fry your brain.
Exactly.
I mean, you know.
So it turns out one of the reasons golf courses and sometimes farmers and other people agree, please come put this tree-looking thing on our land, is because you can make an absurd amount of money by, quote, leasing this little spot of land. And I don't remember what the number was at the golf course by where we lived. But it was so ridiculous that at the time I joked, you could put a fake evergreen cell tower on top of my house for that amount of money. That's how much money we're talking. So listen to this story from Realtor.com. Schools and churches are now cashing in on cell towers, and nearby homeowners fear the cost. And the story comes with a picture of a very old historic school in Portland. And the American flag is over there to the right. And on the left, on the top of the roof, is a gigantic cell tower.
Okay.
The Knox School stands on 40 waterfront acres overlooking Stony Brook Harbor. Soon, the century-old campus could also overlook a 140-foot cell tower. The telecommunications company behind the project says it is needed to close a gap in wireless coverage in a small village on Long Island's North Shore. Residents, meanwhile, have repeatedly argued that the tower will intrude on the community's prized coastal views. The installation would introduce a prominent and permanent visual intrusion that is neither necessary, nor well-suited to its setting. Quoting here from Michael Utevsky, mayor of neighboring Head of Harbor. Okay. In April, the planning board denied a necessary permit for that project to move forward, citing inconsistencies in the proposal. The telecommunications company then sued. That dispute is now headed for court. But the fight unfolding around Stony Brook Harbor is just one installment, they write, of a conflict that has been playing out across the country for nearly a half century. As demand for mobile technology keeps growing, cell tower proposals have remained a source of bitter local conflict, even as the infrastructure becomes harder for communities to avoid. Objections vary from place to place, but the most persistent is the easiest to see. Residents don't want large industrial structures dominating the landscape outside of their homes. And as a solution, some companies have started to camouflage their technology. And what follows, you guys, is a photo not of the fake evergreen tree that's like four stories high in Leawood, but a tree that sort of looks like a gigantic oak. Sort of. From a distance if you squint.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that. One of them I'm looking at is clearly in a coastal area, and they have put they've put leaves at the top, so it sort of looks like a palm tree. And it goes on and on and on about how we need these towers, some of them hiding in plain sight.
If we would like to still using,
yes.
Keep using 5G, 6G, whatever.
Yes. In communities where local rules or political opposition make an exposed tower nearly impossible to approve, the expense can become part of the price of building the network. church steeples, it turns out, and bell towers offer another form of concealment, literally hiding antennas inside structures that already fit the surrounding architecture. Now, I don't know whether this...
Like a church bell tower?
Oh, it legit... I'm looking right at it. It's a bell tower. Look it up. Concealment structures frequently represent the only technically and commercially viable solution for adding these things, according to Structure Magazine. But camouflage does not make residents sometimes any more willing to accept it. And it goes into all of the fights that we have seen over these towers. If one of these went up on the top of your school, your neighborhood school, not the school where, you know, you attended.
Right.
Your neighborhood school where you live.
Right down the street from your house.
Or right down the street from your house, hidden behind the spire of a church. Would you care? We have to have the technology. We gripe every single time we drop a call. Wait, you're cutting out. What?
Can you hear me?
We gripe every single time a call cuts out. So you have to have the tower, but no one wants to live near them. And Sam, I'm going to have you look up the price of what they will pay.
Right here.
What they will pay you to put that tower on your land.
So it depends on where you are. If you're in a rural area or along a highway, anywhere from $500 to $1,000 per month. Suburban, which I think the one at the golf course would qualify as suburban, anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500. If you're in an urban high-density area, that jumps to $2,000 or more than $5,000.
A month?
A month. And if you are a rooftop leaser, the building owner gets up to or more than $3,500. Now, that also comes with a built-in, most of the time, according to Gemini, a built-in 2% increase or 3% escalator each year. So say you're on the lower end, you have a farm property, you get one put on your property for $1,500 a month. It's a 25-year lease. You just signed an agreement for $580,000.
Which is why I said you could plop one of those down on my roof all day long. Now, obviously, you can't put them on a residential house. But you start to see where municipalities or churches or schools will say, come on in. The water's fine. You want to pay me $3,000 a month to put that tower right there? Now, would you be worried about the health ramifications of having one nearby?
I would.
I don't know. One of my best friends lives 100 yards from one. I've never asked her about it. I should. You can literally see it out of her back deck.
Does she feel scrambled at all?
I don't know. I've never dropped a call at her house.
Well, you remember they did the investigation a couple of years. Well, of course not. You wouldn't drop the call. A couple of years ago, they did the investigation about the elementary school here in the metro where a certain number of teachers had breast cancer.
Yes.
And of course, I mean, obviously, they found no connection to the cell tower, but they cared enough to look into it.
So there's another story right now where an advocacy group is claiming that a church and church preschool allowed a company to hide a cell tower on property and then didn't tell the community. Would you want to know? I mean, look.
Do you have an obligation to tell the community?
I don't think so. If it's hiding up behind your bell tower or your spire, an obligation to, why?
I don't know.
Our kids are surrounded by that sort of microwave technology everywhere we go all day, aren't we? I could be wrong. Tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
913-586-7798. Take your calls on this straight ahead. You're listening to Dana and Parks on KMBZ.
Speaking of elementary school, it is back to school season. And as you are going out and shopping for school supplies for your kiddo, please take a moment and help us out as well. We are partnering with Foster Adopt Connect and Pinnacle Bank for the Foster Adopt Connect school supply drive. Just go to KMBZ.com, look for the school supply link. You can click there and make a monetary donation to support a backpack full of all of the goodies that they need for a new school year. Or, as I mentioned, you can pick up a few extra items while you're shopping for your own child's school supplies and drop them off at one of three locations. All the details for the drop-off locations, KMBZ.com, under the school supply drive link. You can also make the monetary donation there. Together, we can give kids a strong start to the school year. Thanks again to Pinnacle Bank and Foster Adopt Connect.
Okay. I saw this last night. I saw it this morning. You know I hate talking about this, but it really might affect everybody if we can just figure out what it means. The House has passed a bill making daylight saving time permanent. Now, you might be asking yourself, what does that mean? Which one is it? I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't understand time zones. I don't understand time.
I thought we wanted standard time.
No. The House has passed a bill to make daylight saving time permanent nationwide amid a years-long push to end the twice annual clock change. The bill is called the... good God.
And by years long, they mean like 70.
The Sunshine Protection Act. Seriously?
We got to protect the sun. We got to protect the sun.
Okay. Passed in a 308-117 vote. In addition to keeping clocks shifted 1 hour ahead, again, I don't know what that means, which happens in the spring, the measure would allow states to use standard time if an exemption is in effect before the federal law is enacted. Because Hawaii and most of Arizona currently use standard time. Quoting here from Representative Frank Pallone of New Jersey, I don't really know anybody who wants to change the clock anymore. Another representative, Florida, Vern, introduced the bill, said on Tuesday, the clock changes disrupt schedules, quote, for no good reason. Proponents argue the change would have positive impacts on sleep schedules, people's health, and the economy, and would allow Americans to have more daylight hours in the evening throughout the year. Okay, here we go. This is the one where critics say it would extend the darkness in the morning hours of the winter and would be negative then. So this is the one. Good God, is it the one we're in right now?
That's the one we're in right now.
Yeah, we would just always be in this right now. But in the winter...
That the one that people wanted more was actually the other one.
No, it's this one because you want to be outside at 9 p.m. when it's nice out.
Okay.
But in the winter, correct me if I'm wrong, kids at the school bus stop, it could be... Look this up, Sam. It could be still dark at the bus stop at like 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. or something. That's the downside of this.
Downside.
So House passed it. I assume it's now got to go to the Senate.
No, I'm pretty sure that the one that everybody is saying that we wanted to stick with is actually standard time.
This is the good one. In 1973, here's the problem. In 1973, Congress briefly made daylight saving time permanent and reversed course months later after public opinion soured on it.
Permanent daylight saving time would mean that in the winter in Mission, Kansas, the sun would likely not rise until after 8:30 a.m.
Yep. Permanent daylight saving time was repealed within a year. Again, we've done this once back in 1973. Permanent daylight saving time was repealed within a year because it didn't work. We all enjoy the extra hour or so of sunlight in the summer, but when people are considering this, you need to consider the extra hours of darkness in the winter. I don't care. I'm still in bed at 8:30 in the morning for the most part. Not today and yesterday, but for the most part, I'm rolling out of bed around 8 anyway. I think this is great. Let's do it.
I guess I just don't really understand why we put so much on the idea that the sun is up or not. Granted, I get that our circadian rhythm prefers to wake up once the sun is already up, and it prefers to go to bed about the time the sun goes down.
No.
But we have this modern technology, bear with me.
Blackout curtains.
Called electricity.
Yeah.
And this other modern technology called lights. Just get up. I get up in the dark every day. Get up.
Yeah, you've lost your mind. I don't know how you do it. Here's what I will say. In the winter, if we did this, and I hope that they do, in the winter, when we leave the building, Sam, or we even look out at 4:35 o'clock, it starts getting dark.
Yeah.
That has the worst effect on so many people, and I'm one of them. I know Scott's one of them with the seasonal affective disorder. If we could just have a little bit more daylight, it would still be darker earlier in the winter. But it wouldn't be dark outside at 5 o'clock like it is now.
I'm so confused. Because that everybody's been yelling about wanting to stay permanent the whole time was standard time. I have confirmed that with multiple different sources, that the one that everybody wants nationwide is not daylight saving time. They want the other one. Would that make it darker earlier or darker later?
Okay,
My
brain hurts. I'm the worst person to lead this conversation. Google, if we kept standard daylight,
y'all are dumb.
Let me read this from the New York Times. This is the one we want, Sam. Here's why.
What time?
House Republicans and Democrats all united in favor just now of eliminating the semi-annual clock changing.
But that doesn't mean that they're appropriately representing the people. They never do that.
They overwhelmingly voted this week to make daylight saving time permanent. It faces a murky road in the Senate, by the way.
The earliest sunset would be 5:55 p.m. in January, so it would move it back an hour.
So it would be dark still at 6 o'clock, but at least it's not 5 o'clock. I just go nuts.
What's the difference?
An hour, Sam, is the difference.
Thank God. I go back to the age-old Native American quote. That it's just the Europeans who think that you can cut an inch off the top of a blanket and sew it to the bottom and think the blanket gets longer.
Listen to this. I love it. A sizable block of Florida in Congress is leading the charge on the legislation. Of course, Florida would. That would do just that. Mandating daylight saving time nationwide for the entire year. House leaders agreed to allow a vote on the measure this week. It is a vote that the White House has championed. Congress, by the way, first passed the Standard Time Act in 1918 and established federal oversight of time zones way, way, way back then.
From the text line, farmers are the ones that are upset about the idea of year-round daylight saving time. Let me tell you something. I know a few farmers. The clock is not what they operate on. Whatever that little thing with 12 numbers on it says does not matter.
No, my grandpa would say the same thing.
If they have to be up to feed the animals, guess what?
They get up.
They're getting up to feed the animals. If the clock says 3, it says 3. If it says 4, it says 4.
Now, I will tell you this. Sleep experts warn that permanent daylight saving time could hurt and not help our sleep health. I don't agree with that. They argue that the winter time zones align closely with our body's circadian rhythm. Should it pass, state lawmakers could opt out of it in favor of year-round standard time if such legislation was enacted. How do you guys feel about this? I don't know. You know what I know? I'm sick and tired of talking about it. They have been kicking this can around for as long as I've been in the news business. Just do it. If you're going to do it, let's just do it. Let's stop talking about doing it.
When was the first time we talked about getting rid of the time shift?
It's been every single year that we've been on this program. 913-586-7798. We'll wrap up the hour. See, it's daylight out now. It would still be daylight out in the winter. We will wrap up our hour.
For another 11 minutes.
I'll take it. We'll wrap up the hour after this on Dana and Parks.
We're talking about the continuing conversation that seems to plague our Congress members every single year, whether or not we should continue doing the time change. And now the House has voted. They want to keep daylight saving time. However, according to everybody, they would prefer standard time. I said in the last segment that we have been fighting over this for 70 years. And I apologize.
Yeah.
I was wrong. I was so wrong. We first passed the Standard Time Act in 1918. The first time that Congress tried to repeal the Standard Time Act. Care to guess?
No. Lay it on me.
1919.
1 year later.
We didn't even make it one calendar year before they were like, well, wait a minute, this idea sucks. Now, there have been a bunch of arguments about why they implemented it in the first place. According to this particular story from military.com, the idea was a wartime effort to conserve fuel, coal, and electricity, so that people weren't staying up later using all of those resources to power their homes. We could save those for war efforts. We've been fighting over this for 107 years.
Well, let's keep it going with Kathy and Olathe. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Well, I thought of a second question while I was on hold. My original is, what happens to places like Arizona that never has observed daylight savings time? They're on standard time the whole time. And what about the rest of the world? Does this just put us more out of sync with everyone else, or it doesn't matter?
Kathy, it's a good question. I don't know. I only know what our time zone is here. I know when I go to visit my parents, it's the same. And if I go to Arizona, it's different by an hour. In California, it's different, I think, by two. No, it's one. When I travel, I look it up. And outside of that, I have no idea what everybody else is doing.
To be clear, it is a different time zone if you go to the East Coast.
I know it. I'm just saying, do I think it's going to be, if we have a patchwork of a system moving forward, it's going to be disastrous? I would say no, not any more than it already is.
Oh, how would you like?
We already work under, try going to Indiana.
How would you like it if Kansas had it and Missouri did not? So you have an appointment on the Missouri side of the state line and you need to figure out, well, is it actually 11 or is it noon?
No, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out. I'm absolutely out. We'll keep our eye on it. We'll let you know what happens.
Will they end a 107-year fight this year?
No.
Probably
the answer
not.
Is no. You know that the answer is no. I got a bunch of fun little things. I don't want to ramp with that. Oh, here's a good one. Oh, sweet baby. Fans of Taylor Swift, quietly raised all kinds of money for a Kansas City nonprofit in honor of her wedding to Travis Kelce. Swift's fans are excited she found love and were thrilled the couple tied the knot. And although we have all been anxiously awaiting photos from the ceremony and that dress, fans did something cool over the past couple of weeks for a Kansas City nonprofit that is close to Travis Kelce's heart. Kelce's 87 and Running Foundation, which works with Operation Breakthrough, as you guys know, for the past decade, helps kids in need in the Kansas City area. After Kelce and Swift donated $26 million to nonprofit organizations around the country, Swifties encouraged others to give $13.87 in honor of her favorite number and his jersey number. And it was all done quietly. I didn't even see this until you put it in the stack, Sam. It was all done quietly without much fanfare. All told, Swifties quietly raised more than $17,000 for Operation Breakthrough. From Instagram, to everyone who joined in this fundraiser, totaling $17,474.82, thank you. We are overwhelmed by the kindness and generosity shown through this special campaign celebrating these two people. Watching so many people turn a joyful moment into something that will make a real difference for our children has been incredibly meaningful to us. How sweet is that?
It's incredible.
Speaking of the Chiefs.
Love for that couple is incredible.
Have you seen Eric Stone Street is playing the Chiefs' Patrick Mahomes in a commercial?
I have not, but I'm sure it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. When it comes to the Chiefs, Emmy Award-winning actor Eric Stone Street wears his heart on his sleeve. Stone Street, as you know, grew up in KCK, went to K-State, has season tickets, all that stuff. So perhaps he was born to play his latest acting role, Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. For the past several years, Mahomes has appeared in online commercials for Coors Light and made a point of noting that because he's a professional athlete, he cannot endorse a beer company. And you know this, Coors Light previously has found very clever ways around that rule, including, remember last year, the Coors Light bear. Instead of beer, Coors Light bear.
They also had the Coors Light flashlight, so it was a big flashlight that said Coors on the side, Coors Light.
This year, instead of Coors Light Bear, they asked Eric Stone Street to help. Quoting here from Mahomes at the start of the spot. Some years ago, I entered into an agreement with Coors Light. However, due to certain rules, I'm not contractually permitted to appear in any commercials that promote alcoholic beverages. So instead, I found the perfect actor for the job. Eric Stone Street then appears dressed up like Patrick Mahomes and talks about throwing long touchdowns and having a cold brew. We will post it on our social media channels. It is funny.
I love it. I can't wait to see it.
Let's do it.
That's some good stuff.
Why can't they do beer? They can't do beer. What else, Sam? Cigarettes, I assume.
Well, nobody can drink beer in a commercial if it's on TV. But yeah, right? If it's online, it doesn't look good because you are supposed to be the one that is the idol for the kids that are coming up. And kind of the same thing where they talk about, you know, let's not get any trouble. Rashee Rice, because kids are looking up to you.
Sure.
And you need to be a good role model.
Sure. We have one soccer game left Sunday morning. And then it's over.
I'm a huge fan of soccer, and I'm tired of talking about soccer.
It's been fun. Hasn't it been fun?
I was a fan of soccer before FIFA came in.
Find yourself a watch party on Sunday.
Oh, I can't wait.
Let's just put a good, safe exclamation point on the month that has been FIFA. We will be back here tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Thank you for your continued support of the Dana and Parks program, everybody. Have a good night. Be safe. Be good.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.